What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Freeman's Podcast. So in light of all the confusion and chaos going on in our culture and government, I thought it would be a good time for us to start asking, isn't there a better way? Like, does it have to be this way? And the answer is no, it doesn't have to be this way. And yes, there is a better way. This is part three of a series that we have been going through where we are looking back at those who came before and asking the question, what can we learn from them? We're specifically looking at the Sons of Liberty in 1772 with the Boston Pamphlet on the rise of British tyranny and how they stood up for the God-given rights of all the colonists. And in this series, we've been focusing on and asking the question, what can we learn from them? And how can we apply where they got it right to our current situation in hopes of finding a better way forward? So if you're interested, I'd ask you, join us. Let's get started. Alrighty, so we're picking back up where we left off. We've finished the first two sections of the Boston Pamphlet. The first section was broken up into three parts, written by Samuel Adams, where he described our rights as men, as Christians, and as British subjects or citizens. And then the second part was written by Joseph Warren, where he laid out the list of grievances where those rights have been violated. And now we're going to get into the letter that was sent to the other towns of Massachusetts, asking them to agree with these rights and liberty, to ask for unity on the issues where the government had overstepped, and just calling for a general unity to stand up in support of each other's rights and liberty that God had given them. So as we get into this, you just need to keep in mind that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit and property. We have the right to protect these other rights as God has given them to us. We have the responsibility and the right to worship God according to the dictates of our conscience, that government doesn't have arbitrary absolute power over our property or our lives, that government exists to protect the rights and liberty of the people, and that we have a responsibility when government oversteps to stand up and show where they have and declare what God has given us in our rights and our liberty and stand up for everyone else around us. Os Guinness likes to say it this way. We need to have an attitude of liberty and justice for all by all. So this letter, it's a letter of correspondence to the other towns of surrounding Boston throughout Massachusetts. And again, it was written by Benjamin Church. It was sent on November 20th, 1772. So the opening of the letter is a statement of the alarm of the people of Boston that, quote, the plan of despotism which the enemies of our invaluable rights have concerted, end quote, is almost complete. So they were almost under the total absolute control of the English government without their consent. So Benjamin Church then brings up the issue of the judges being paid by the crown instead of by the colonial legislature, which if you want the history in that, I'd invite you to go listen to part one of this series. The people would have no way to check the power of the judges who had so much power over their rights and lives. And so they were under this massive concern. They asked for information on this from the governor. The governor denied them. And then they say this in the letter, we cannot but be extremely alarmed at the mischievous tendency of this innovation, which in our opinion is directly contrary to the spirit of the British Constitution, pregnant with innumerable evils, and hath a direct tendency to deprive us of everything valuable as men, as Christians, and as subjects, entitled by the Royal Charter to all the rights, liberties, and privileges of native Britons. So what Church is saying here is that with the courts now getting their salaries from Great Britain, we have no control, we have no check on them, and we are alarmed at this, and it is that in their opinion, this is completely against the spirit of the British Constitution, that there's nothing but evil in this, and that it has a tendency to deprive the Americans of their most valuable rights as men, as Christians, and as subjects, entitled by the Royal Charters, that's the laws that established the colonies, to all the rights and liberties and privileges of native Britons. So he's saying, like, we have under law this protection, but this next step by the British government is now infringing upon and violating even the law that's supposed to protect our rights, our liberties, and our properties. So moving on in the next part here of the letter, it is, Benjamin Church writes, such being the critical state of this province, we think it our duty on this truly distressing occasion to ask you, what can withstand the attacks of mere power? What can preserve the liberties of the subject when the barriers of the Constitution are taken away? So here's a question for us today. If our Constitution is ignored, or if its meaning can be changed according to the interpretation of whoever's in power at the moment, then what security is there for our God-given rights and liberty? What can withstand the attacks of mere power? Because without the Constitution, that's all it is. It is mere power being exercised by whoever happens to be at the top of the heap at the moment. So the next section deals with the letters that were being sent back and forth between the town of Boston and the governor, which led to this pamphlet and this letter that we're reading through now. So the people of Boston, they wanted the other towns and villages to know that they had tried to get answers from the government, but they were denied. And I think that that's a very important point to be made, is that they weren't just like, the government's out of hand. They were pleading and petitioning the government to give them information to fix these issues, but the government kept denying them. So Church goes on to write, "The affair being a public concernment, the town of Boston thought it necessary to consult with our brethren throughout the province, and for this purpose appointed a committee to communicate with our fellow sufferers respecting this recent instance of oppression, as well as the many other violations of our rights under which we have groaned for several years past." So there's a call for unity, and it has finally been made here. Boston is asking the other towns to join them in their stand against British tyranny. And while these constitutional violations had been going on, the British administration, the people and the, if you will, like we have a presidential administration, the people in the British administration, they've been telling the king and parliament and the newspapers in England that the people of America were actually fine with all the violations, and that the only people who weren't fine with these things were a few, as I quote, "a few factious, designing, and disaffected men," end quote. And just think about the arrogance of that. Like, here you are, you're doing all these things, unconstitutional, unlawful things to the Americans, and you're telling the people at home in Great Britain, oh, they're fine with it, and the only people that aren't, it's just some rabble rousers. Good grief, I couldn't get the word out. I mean, it's just seething with arrogance. They don't want to hear that they're out of line. They aren't willing to, even though there's been petition after petition, and a lot of power has been moving from hand to hand as people keep getting out of line in England, but they keep going back to oppression. They keep going back to this tyrannical attitude of, no, we get to exercise this authority over you without your consent. So this led the people of Boston to ask the other towns to communicate with them if they thought, one, Boston had stated the rights and liberty correctly; two, that Boston had listed the unconstitutional acts, the grievances, and violations of their rights, again, correctly. So, hey, you other towns of Massachusetts, do you agree that we have a right to life, liberty, and property, and that we have the right to preserve these, that we have a right to worship God according to the dictates of our conscience, that we have a right to security in our property, and that government doesn't get to take that without our consent? Do you agree with this? Also, do you agree that, hey, Parliament's tried to have absolute arbitrary power over us where they get to bind us in all cases whatsoever? Parliament keeps doing all 12 of those violations. I'm not going to reiterate them. If you want to hear them, you can listen to the second part in this series. But so they ask him, like, do you agree here? Do you think we've done this correctly? So Church then states that if the other towns agree, if you agree with us, then, quote, "you will doubtless think it of the utmost importance that we stand firm as one man to recover and support them, our rights, and to take such measures by directing our representatives or otherwise as your wisdom and fortitude shall dictate to rescue from impending ruin our happy and glorious Constitution." So here is the clarion call for unity. Let's stand as one man firmly to recover and support our rights. Let's take such measures to direct our representatives in Massachusetts and anyone that will listen in England. Or on top of that, at any wisdom and fortitude that you will dictate, that you think have some good ideas of how we can rescue and protect our rights, but also to rescue from impending ruin our happy and glorious Constitution. Like, here's something we can learn from them. Let's stand firm as one man to protect the liberty and rights of each other. I'll stand up for your rights and liberty. You stand up for mine. Let's stand together and let's direct our representatives. Let's get in touch with them. Let's talk to them like, hey, here's our rights. Here's where the government keeps overstepping. Here's where our Constitution keeps getting ignored. Hey, help us rescue from impending ruin our happy and glorious Constitution. Like, they could say it back then for the British Constitution. How much more us with an, in my humble opinion, a much better Constitution that we have for the United States of America. Let's do what we must for each other, for coming generations, to defend and protect the rights and liberty God has given us, to ask our representatives to direct them to stand firm with us, to redress and fix the issues where they violated, the government has violated our constitutional rights, our God-given rights, and let's stand up for our happy and glorious Constitution, as they called it. So the next part of the letter is, it's actually pretty sarcastic. As Benjamin Church, he lays out what would be the case if the other towns disagreed with the town of Boston, if they didn't think these were our rights, if they didn't think these violations were real. There's also a reminder in this section that the sacrifice of those who came before us, before them, should never be forgotten. It says, in quote, "But if it should be the general voice of this province that the rights as we have stated them do not belong to us, or that the several measures of the administration in the British court are no violations of these rights, or that if they are thus violated or infringed, they are not worth contending for or resolutely maintaining. Should this be the general voice of the province, we must be resigned to our wretched fate, but shall forever lament the extinction of that generous ardor for civil and religious liberty, which in the face of every danger and even death itself induced our fathers to forsake the bosom of their native country and begin a settlement on bare creation." Like, if you don't think these things are the case, or if you think that our rights and liberty aren't worth standing up for, aren't worth contending for, aren't worth resolutely maintaining, then we have nothing. And we would lament that spirit that imbued our fathers for the protection of civil and religious liberty, that in the face of every danger and even death itself, it induced our fathers, it moved them to forsake England and to come to this country and begin a settlement on bare creation. Like, just let that sink in. Like, what is at stake here? What the history of so many willing to sacrifice for the civil and religious liberty that God has given us, that our Constitution protects for us and for coming generations. If we should just let these things be words and let them be things that aren't worth contending for, then they're going to be gone. And that future generations would be there to lament that we gave up this, as Ronald Reagan said, this last best hope for liberty. So the letter then states that Boston doesn't think that the other towns would disagree with them and just sit by while their rights and liberty were being taken away. And I don't think that you would disagree with Boston or with me that these things are worth standing up for. Church says, quote, "It is an observation of an eminent patriot that a people long inured to hardships lose by degrees the very notions of liberty. They look upon themselves as creatures at mercy, and that all impositions laid on by superior hands are legal and obligatory. But thank heaven, this is not yet verified in America. We have yet some share of public virtue remaining. We are not afraid of poverty, but disdain slavery." Man, I love this statement because it just, when we are in a situation where there's chaos and there's confusion in our politics and our culture, where we just get hammered with all these violations, all this corruption over and over and over and over again, then it is common for people who are in that type of situation to lose by degrees the very notions of liberty. Like, and to think that the government has the authority to do this. Why wouldn't they? They've been always doing this. like superior hands. Like, this is legal. It's obligatory. We have to obey this when government oversteps and violates our rights. Like, when we are in this situation where it just is like this wave upon wave upon wave, then people just get used to it. They, I love the language. They think of themselves as creatures at mercy. We're at mercy of the, whoever happens to be in authority. But like Benjamin Church said, I would say too, thank heaven this is not yet verified in America. May it be so. May God forbid that this would be the case of in America. We have yet some share of public virtue remaining. We are not afraid of poverty, but disdain slavery for ourselves and anyone. So I would ask, have we become so used to the constitutional violations or to reports of corruption or scandals in our own government that we just see these things as normal and accept them for the sake of not rocking the boat? May it always be said again that this is not the case in America, that we still have a share of public virtue remaining. We are not afraid of poverty, but we disdain slavery. The letter then shifts and shows that because revolutions and tyranny can take place so unexpectedly, that in order to make sure both of tyranny or revolutions don't have to happen, quote, it becomes every well-wisher to his country, while it has any remains of freedom, to keep an eagle eye upon every innovation and stretch of power in those that have the rule over us. We have to stay vigilant while we still have the freedom to do so. When people in government claim that they have to have a little more power, no matter how small, free people have to stand up and peacefully do everything in their power to keep their freedom and tell those who would seek more power to rule in areas that they have no authority to, we must be able to say to them, no. And if we don't, if we're willing to just let this happen, we won't be free very long. As an example of how important it is for people to stay vigilant, the letter then shows that in their time, in 1772 or around that time, the King of Sweden had just recently taken absolute power in the country over a free people. And to where now this free people, that their minds are now, quote, their minds are now so debased that they even rejoice at being subject to the caprice and arbitrary power of a tyrant and kiss their chains. The warning here, don't let this be the American colonies. And the warning for us, what we can learn from them, don't let this become the United States of America, where we are so used to it and we're, our minds become so debased that we would rejoice at being the subjects of a arbitrary power of a tyrant and then kiss our chains. May it never be so. So finally, moving on to the last part of the letter. With all this in mind, this letter of correspondence finishes up with this quote. It makes us shudder to think the late measures of administration may be productive of this like catastrophe, which heaven forbid. Let us consider, brethren, we are struggling for our best birthrights and inheritance, which being infringed renders all our blessings precarious in their enjoyments and consequently trifling in their value. Let us disappoint the men who are raising themselves on the ruin of this country. Let us convince every invader of our freedom that we will be as free as the Constitution our fathers recognized will justify. So, why all this is, why it's significant for us, what we can be learning from this. Great Britain had been seeking to bind the colonists, the American colonies, in all cases whatsoever without their consent. And these men, the Sons of Liberty, the people of Boston, decided to stand up against the mightiest empire in the world for the rights and liberty that God had given them and had given to us. They stood up for us. This Boston pamphlet is mine, and it's yours. It's a cry against the injustice of tyranny. It's a declaration of our God-given rights, and it is a call for unity to stand against this kind of tyranny. May we have the courage to stand up as well for ourselves and those who will come after. And may we say, as this letter did, let us disappoint the men who are raising themselves on the ruin of this country. Let us convince every invader of our freedom that we will be as free as the Constitution our fathers recognized will justify. So, what this meant in their day and what we can keep learning from it, this whole situation, all three of these episodes that we've done so far, are showing that it was local assemblies unifying for liberty, for each other, under God. So they were standing up for the liberty that God had given them. They were standing up for truth and righteousness and justice, that when injustice was being done, when rights were being violated, they would stand up for each other. It was a clear and bold stand against tyranny, and it was a call for, and excuse me, this whole document, the Boston pamphlet, it called for and resulted in the unity that brought about the United States of America. So what we can be learning from this, we should too work to stand up for the God-given rights and liberty of our families and our neighbors. Again, like Ozgenes says, it is a call for liberty and justice for all by all. This takes courage to stand against those who would seek our harm and destruction of our God-given rights and liberty. We should take the lesson from these men that it may be hard for us to take this stand, but it is always worth it to stand for what is right, to keep an ever watchful eye on those who want to have power over us, and to seek out a better way forward, that we will be as free as God has made us, and that our Constitution will justify. So, this being the end of the Boston pamphlet, I hope that it encouraged you guys. I hope that you see that there's so much to learn. Yes, these were imperfect men. They had a lot of things wrong. They didn't get it right all the time, but there's a lot of good here, a lot of good lessons that we can take to heart, that we can start unifying on what our freedom really is, what our rights are under God, and that we can stand up for one another. We can call out when the government violates these rights, and we can direct our representatives to fix these issues, that we can stand united for one another. See, this is a better way forward. When so much wants to cause disunity, we can start standing in unity for God's blessings of our rights and our liberty and for each other. So, I wanted to close with this passage of scripture, just talking about the unity here, because this Boston pamphlet really is the foundation of American unity. Psalm 133 verse 1 says, "Behold, how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity." May God bless you guys. May God bless the United States with unity for what truth is, what righteousness is, what justice really is as God defines it. May God bless us with unity on what our rights are under God, what our liberty is under God. And may we stand together to defend this against any who would raise themselves on the ruin of our country and seek to enslave anyone. So, I hope you guys are encouraged by this. I hope that you're blessed by this document. We're going to do a lot more of these in the future where we look at documents from the founding era and look to see what we can learn from them and how we can apply it to our culture and our context. But yeah, if you did find it encouraging, please share it with a friend. Please like, subscribe, hit that bell to get notifications when we drop new content. And yeah, if you're on Apple or Spotify, please give us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. But thanks again for listening, y'all. God bless. Thank you for listening to the Free Man's Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe for more great episodes coming your way soon. For more information and to sign up for exclusive bonus content, you can visit our website, thefreemanspodcast.com. Thanks again for listening, and God bless y'all.